Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "No man can serve two masters. He will either hate the one and love the other, or be attentive to one and despise the other. You cannot give yourself to God and money. I warn you then, do not worry about your livelihood, what you are to eat or drink or use for clothing. Is not life more than food? Is not the body more valuable than clothes? Look at the birds in the sky. They do not sow or reap or gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more important than one of those? Which of you, by worrying, can add a moment to his lifespan? As for clothes, why be concerned? Learn a lesson from the way the wildflowers grow. They do not sow or reap or gather into barns. Yet, I assure you, not even in all of his glory was Solomon arrayed as one of these. If God can clothe in such splendor the grass of the field, which blooms today and is thrown on the fire tomorrow, will he not provide much more for you, O weak of faith? Stop worrying then over questions like, what are we to eat, what are we to drink, or what are we to wear? The unbelievers are always running after these things. Your heavenly Father knows all you need. Seek first his kingdom, and then all these other things will be given you as well. Enough then of worrying about tomorrow. Let tomorrow take care of itself. Today has enough troubles of its own." The Gospel of the Lord. So I guess if you were going to punch in on your keypads, the question would be, how many of you agree with the last line of the gospel? Yes, register your vote. I'm sure we would have very few exceptions in terms of agreement with that. Today has enough troubles of its own. Two great issues that come up in the readings, and they're very much connected. They're wonderful reflection as we prepare for the Lenten season. First reading, Isaiah calling out saying, could a mother forget her child? No. And yet we know of instances where it has happened. Not necessarily maliciously, sometimes maliciously. But for the most part, there are many different reasons, but we know today and in our world that it could happen indeed, that it has happened. Back in the time of Isaiah, obviously they felt, no, there was no way. But things have changed dramatically in the world, and the pressures and circumstances cause people to do things that heretofore they would never have thought of doing. It's a very strange world that we're living in. Prophet Isaiah, in speaking to the people of Israel, could a mother forget her child or the infant that she holds close to her cheek? Could she ever forget her? No. And he says, so it is with God. So it is with you. In speaking this to the people of Israel, it was very important because they were at a very low ebb in their history. The temple, which was central to them as a people, had been destroyed in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was ransacked, and they had been taken away into exile in Babylon when Isaiah is writing these words. So for the people who believed that they were the chosen ones and that God had specifically chosen them, they were feeling that angst that perhaps he has abandoned us. It's a feeling that comes to many people in their lives. It's a feeling that comes to many Christians in their lives. Maybe he has abandoned us. People think about it when they are faced with great hardship or great struggle or great adversity or difficulty. People of Israel were no exception. And here comes Isaiah saying, no, God hasn't abandoned you at all. In fact, he's with you through all of this. He's not going to divert these things, but he's going to walk with you and be with you through all of this. That was very important. And it's very important for us today to know and to understand that, because it is so easy to slide over that little edge and fall into a kind of despair, saying, there's nothing more I can do. It happens oftentimes to people. Jesus knew it was happening. That's why in the gospel, he emphasized again and again and again, just in this gospel passage, don't worry. Don't worry. Be happy. Right? You know that one? Don't worry. My mother used to have the expression, if you worry, you'll die. And if you don't worry, you'll die. So why worry? Right? Simple enough. Or the adage that goes, I'm an old man now and I've had many worries, most of which have never come true. Many old people could tell you the very same truth, but it didn't stop them from worrying. The great adage that says, never worry, worry until worry worries you. Don't go chasing worry. Don't go looking for it. It'll find you indeed. And Jesus knew and understood that. A woman in Dublin, she belonged to an inner city parish, and she had great difficulty with her son. Great, great difficulty, and the more she pleaded with him to mend his ways, the more difficult things became for her. He wouldn't work, refused to work. He spent his time drinking with his confreres, his buddies, hanging around with some troublemakers. And he was a great difficulty to her. He robbed everything that she had of value in the house to support a drug habit or a drug addiction. Again and again, she pleaded with him to change his ways, to mend his ways. She prayed for him and prayed for him unceasingly. And her heart was just broken with this, her son. He had made her life pretty miserable, and she carried that pain every day. And eventually he ended up in prison, and many people thought, well, that's good. You know, that'll take care of this issue. And many people thought, well, now you just need to leave him there and let the system take care of him, and maybe they'll teach him a lesson. But she didn't. She went every week to visit him. And in a little grocery bag, she carried him a pack of two packs of cigarettes and some toiletries and little things that he was allowed to receive in the prison. And every week she went faithfully to visit with him and prayed and hoped that he would turn around his ways. One day she was coming out of the prison. She met the local priest, and he said to her, Bridie, he said, he has broken your heart. Maybe this will teach him. Maybe you should just leave him and let him be. And she said, Father, I couldn't possibly do that. He said, this son has ruined your life. He'll never change. Why don't you just forget about him? And she said, Father, I couldn't do that. I don't like what he has done, but he is still my son. And she continued to visit. Takes great energy to continue in the face of such adversity and seeming nothing good happening. And yet one never knows how close you really are to that conversion where God really does bring about the things that he promises. The people of Israel were in that kind of a predicament. People every day in life are in that kind of a predicament and wondering, God, where are you? Many people would say that mother was foolish, wasting her time on him. But to her, she was not foolish in any way. She was doing what a mother does. She was loving him through good times and in bad, and sickness and in health, and all sorts of adversity. Yes, it really is difficult to keep going. But a mother's love is just such a life changer. The greatest love that every one of us knows is a mother's love. Tell me of a love that is greater and more enriching and more endearing and more forgiving and reconciling and understanding. While we have that conflict in having a paternal image of God, sometimes we've got to transition, and that's precisely what the scriptures do. They say, even though God is a father, he is just like the maternal instincts, the loving, outreaching, caring, forgiving, reconciling God. God claims that image for himself, that I'm just like the mother. And what we are led to understand is that if a mother, with all of her own human weaknesses and failings, can love so steadfastly, how much more will our God love us and be faithful to us in the face of adversity? That's something to really reflect on during Lent. That's why it's such a great reading. People accumulate money and possessions and homes and things to try and provide them a sense of security sometimes. And then when they start to lose some of these, maybe sickness takes it away, being diagnosed with cancer, terminal illness, people change radically, knowing that, hey, it's all passing away, and now I've got to focus. It's amazing to visit and talk with some of those people. People of faith do not necessarily rely on those things. They rely on God. And what Jesus is saying in the gospel, when he says, don't worry about tomorrow, he's not condemning human resourcefulness. He's not condemning the idea of having a plan. It's good to have a plan, but he's saying, just for today, trust me, I will bring you there. I will bring you through this. And then tomorrow we'll renew that covenant, and then the next day we will renew it again. He's not saying don't have plans for how to go along or how to journey. What he was condemning was the unnecessary worry. That's why I say unnecessary worry after the Our Father. Let go of the unnecessary. We have to plan for tomorrow indeed. What Jesus was condemning was the fretting and worrying that keeps us from him. From saying, Lord, deepen that trust in me. Help me to really know through our relationship, and again through that personal relationship, help me to know that you do have me covered no matter how difficult this becomes. We are in constant danger in the world that we live in of becoming immersed in the affairs of the world and of becoming enslaved to things. Possessions. The relationship we need is with him. Jesus reminds us that we are God's precious children and that only in God can we really find rest. We must put our future in the hands of God and pray for our daily needs. If he gets us through today, isn't that pretty significant? Because we don't know about tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So celebrating him in the present and during our Lenten experience, maybe becoming aware of how important is he really in my life? What place does he have to really speak that promise to me that he loves me and he covers me in all of my needs?